Blog Talk Radio.
All right, this is Thad. Welcome back to the latest Shades of Blue soccer show. Mike and Steve should be joining me if they're not already on. Mike?
I'm on.
Can one of you guys do?
As like, am I.
Okay, cool. It was just my host thing here was showing you guys were like not connected all the way yet, but it's obviously just a few seconds behind. So, cool. All right, welcome, guys. It's been... Since the last time we talked, there's been a wee bit of news.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, and a few fans unhappy, I would say. So,
that might be an understatement.
That's a fair assessment, yeah, for several reasons.
All right, well, just kicking it off, as probably most people who might listen to this knows, Christian Namath has been transferred to a team in Qatar. I'm not going to try to pronounce the actual team name at the moment. It sounds like the Sporting got about $3 million, or the league, the transfer was for $3 million, so Sporting may have got $2 million of that, roughly. I'm never really sure how when they say the $3 million, but it's how that means. But anyway, Mike, what did this catch you by surprise a little bit?
It happening now caught me by surprise. I had always thought that Namath would start the season with Kansas City, and basically he would never return from the Euros. I figured he would be his performance in the Euros would see him transfer back to Europe, basically, for the start of the 2016-2017 season. So in that regard, it happening at this point was a bit of a surprise.
Steve, after this has all been said and done, Namath posted today his opinion of what happened, and Vermees also said today his opinion of what happened. Can you kind of break down how those conflict, maybe?
Well, it's funny because it's what I had my story night. It's Christian, first thing he says is not about the money, and then it goes into talk about the money. Look, I think that's still the main issue. I mean, that's the that was where the sides were far apart. Now, you're hearing, of course, what you hear and what is actually said in negotiations. You're hearing that he was asking for $500,000. Per year in his renegotiated contract. Sporting were not going to go for their reasons that high. I think all is said and done. Of course, Peter said that in the conference call today, he wasn't exactly sure whether Christian had a gigantic amount to do with that Facebook post or his agents kind of putting that out for him. All said and done, I mean, Sporting walks away, they lose a score, but they walk away with a pile of cash that they can spend. From a business sense, it makes tremendous sense to take the offer while they can, to take a free transfer and turn him into seven figures. It's just a pretty good acumen. Now, are the fans upset? Yeah. But I think the club has kind of earned the benefit of the doubt. They've made good business decisions over the years in terms of getting people in and then getting value for them. You remember Kai Kamara came in for Abe Thompson, which was a low value trade away, and they got money for Kai. Uri came in, I think, on a free acquisition, and they sold him. So they've been able to get low and sell high, and this is just selling higher than usual or higher than before this time. I think, of course, the fans are going to want to see that money spent on acquiring some more firepower. Have to see how it shakes out, but I still think that the Sporting's in a pretty decent spot going forward.
And I would say fans are going to want to see that money spent on some firepower in the near term, not the long term.
I would say probably they're going to – depends on how the preseason shakes out. You know, maybe Daniel Shelley comes in and shows a lot. Maybe Mapp comes up, you know, moves up front and shows a lot. They played Brad Davis on the wing, and he got a goal and an assist the other day from that wing spot. So I think maybe the preseason will kind of show if they need to try to make a move right away. Otherwise, then maybe they're better waiting until the summer transfer window, see if there's some attrition in terms of injuries, in terms of anything else that they need to fill that hole in the summer going into CCL and the Open Cup drive and the MLS season drive.
So I'm not sure where that 500,000 number came from that you mentioned there, Steve, but if that number was accurate, is that an amount you would have paid for him, Mike?
I'm not entirely sure. It goes back to what I said about expecting him to be gone in the summer. If he's gone, if in my mindset, if I'm planning on him being gone in the summer, and I'm only expecting him here for 2 months of the regular season, basically, before he more or less goes off to camp with Hungary and then has the Euros and then is gone. I think in that regard, $500,000 may be a bit much for just that small stretch of time, even though it would obviously come off the books when he left and everything. So in that regard, in my mindset, while $500,000, if you have him for the full season outside the Euros, I think that's a fair amount. But in my mind, if he's leaving in the summer, I'm not sure that's an amount that is that might almost be too much in my mind for 2 months of play, basically.
Yeah, I can understand that. Now, obviously, when agents get involved, it's always going to be about the money. Having talked to Namath a few times and how happy he was to be back in the national team picture again and playing for him pretty regularly and stuff like that, how much do you think that being able to, you know, like the Qatar's league finishes early in April, I believe, and he can basically go train with whoever's available for the national team at that time, and he can be there early. You think that may have applied any?
I think so. I mean, that was before the conference call today. That was, I thought, one of the big main parts of Namath's letter was, if you kind of read between the lines, it was being unhappy about not being able to join the national team likely when he wanted to. When Hungary started camp and when FIFA requires the release, I'm not sure the exact dates, but there is certainly a difference in there's a period of time basically where Hungarian players will be in camp, but the players who are still in league play won't be released yet. So Sporting in that situation would have been totally justified to hold on to Namath as long as they can, but by FIFA's rules. And I had thought that was an area that Namath might not have been too happy about in that regard.
How about you, Steve? Did you get any sense of that from what you know, knowing Nemo and from what he's wrote?
Well, I know that playing for his national team is important to him. For me, it was a location thing as well. I mean, he's going to be on the other side of the Atlantic. There's less of a time zone adjustment. Going back to the Euros, I still think even if Sporting had thought that they would hold him through the year, $500,000 might have been a reach. Because here's why. This is a guy who's has had a career that's been pretty well plagued by injury. I mean, they got a lot out of him last year, but in terms of stringing together several good years without getting knocked around, you know, taking some serious knocks, he hasn't had that yet. Plus, then if you think you're going to keep him through the year, and obviously if he has a good Euro, I think he is gone. But say that you're thinking, okay, blue sky, we hold him through the year. You're paying for 2 months that you're not going to be able to have the guy. because he'll be over. He'd be with Hungary for friendlies. He'd be with them through the Euros. Then you've got the adjustment period when he gets back after all that time over there. You know, another week, 10 days maybe, where he's still readjusting to this time zone. So you got a lot of time when he's away from the picture, and you're paying for a guy you can't use. I really, had he gotten through this year with a good year, you know, taking the increase they offered him, gotten through this year with another solid year, another double-digit goal year, another solid showing in the Open Cup, and stayed injury-free, then I think going into 2017, you know, if you don't get solid offers for him, then maybe you look at that half-million figure, maybe look at making him a DP. But he still has not shown he can stay healthy in the long run yet, and I think that may have been a sticking point as well. I am obviously not a fly in the wall, but I think that might have been a sticking point as well.
Yeah, well, you know, that has to play on anybody's mind that's, you know, signing him or should. I mean, he's not had that healthy season or two seasons in a row. This was really his breakout year last year. And, you know, if it was me, I would have been looking at saying, hey, I'll pay you $300,000 and $200,000 in incentives if you score me 15 goals. Something along, you know, whatever they could work out and along that line, that would have seemed to have been a logical way to have maybe accomplished that. But that's why I didn't know if it came down to money. If, you know, Vermees was pretty smart about that. And it seemed like there was the agent may have got in there and said, hey, we got a really big offer and you need to take it, and it's going to help you be at the Euros and everything else. To me, the one downside to that about going to play guitar is that league is just not all that good. He's not going to be challenged.
He's not going to be challenged, but he's going to be making a ton of money. I mean, and leagues in the Gulf states, particularly Qatar, they tend to pay more maybe than what a lot of the market will bear, because they're trying to get guys in there to raise the profile. You know, what's Nemeth's market value in Europe right now? Hard to tell. But these clubs are just awash in so much money, even with oil prices being down. They can afford to pay more and get internationals in for kind of that prestige signing. That you know, hey, look at us. We're a player in world football in terms of the guys we can bring in. Now, what happens if he has a good Euro tournament, and do they turn around and sell him again? If they do, and they make money in the deal, then that's even better for Sporting, because they've got a sell-through clause, and then that's more money they walk away with out of the deal.
So, Mike, I don't know if you have followed any league in or player or teams in Qatar, or how good they are.
Not really. I mean, anything I would have watched would have been YouTube clips, which would have just been highlights, basically. The only thing I did find when I was doing some looking after the news came out of Nemeth leaving was that the team he's going to is in desperate need of goal scoring. Basically, they're currently eighth in the 14-team Qatar, I guess it's the Stars League, but they've scored just 13 goals this year, which is the second fewest in the entire league. The only team with less is the team at the bottom of the table that has only 4 points all season. So, I mean, they're in desperate need of some goal scoring in that regard. So getting Nemeth, if he can continue to stay healthy, I think Nemeth can at least contribute to help them attempt to move a little bit further up the table for them. But, I mean, the club in Qatar did exactly what clubs need to do. They addressed a need for themselves by going out and getting themselves a striker.
And potentially overpaying for him, but they can do that.
Yeah, that's kind of what they do. Look at all the new money countries. China's a big one in the last few weeks that's really exploited the money that they have in the game at the moment.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so our second controversial move is homegrown player Eric Palmer Brown going on loan to Porto. First impressions on that move, Mike?
I mean, I think it was surprising that I think he went on loan, but not surprising at the same time, if that makes sense. There's been nothing to hide the fact that EPB does have interest in going abroad at some point and playing in Europe, basically. That's kind of been stated by Vermes and other people within the front office. Basically, since we signed him, we've heard the Juventus rumors, basically, again, since he signed with the club, that Juventus was in negotiations to bring him over when he turned 18. But, I mean, I thought he would spend another year in Kansas City. I thought he would, as we discussed last week, I thought he'd spend the majority of the season, if not all of it, on loan to the Rangers. Then maybe next year, hopefully have him in as the starter on the first team. Maybe have a Mike Miazga or Matt Miazga type season, and then make the jump abroad. So it's a little earlier than I expected, but not wholly unexpected.
So, Steve, do you see EPB's loan more for, you know, shopping him around a little bit, or for really getting him some experience overseas? I think for me, he's talked about, you know, needing to get him some experience away from Kansas City.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, now that he's out of high school, he doesn't have that holding him here. And he's going into Porto with a shot at making the senior squad, fighting for a position in Europe, is going to give him a whole lot better education, soccer-wise, than starting it at Swope Rangers. Love USL, love what they're doing with the structure of USL and integrating that into the system. But fact of the matter is, he's going to be going someplace where he's going to have to sink or swim to get minutes with a pretty darn good club. So this is where he's grown up a lot physically. I mean, you've seen how he's filled out from where he started when he first signed to now what he looks like. He is filled out physically. He's always seemed like a pretty self-possessed, pretty mentally tough kid. I say young man now because, you know, he's over 18. But going to Europe and being thrown in. Say again.
I said you can still call him a kid. You're fairly old, so.
Yeah, I'm fairly old. Throwing him into that crucible in Europe, though, is really going to, I think, to refine him. Talk about trial by fire. I think this is where you really find out how mentally tough he is, because he's going to be away from home, and he's been overseas with the U.S. youth national programs, but this is going to be living there and actually settling in someplace on the other side of the world. And that's going to be a pretty big adjustment. And I think it's going to be – he'll find out pretty quickly what it's going to take to compete in Europe, because, you know, that's where he is aiming at for his career. It's where, you know, the U.S. National team system would like to see more players go over at a younger age and really compete. He'll find out pretty quickly if he's got what it takes, I think.
Does it seem odd, though, that a guy who wasn't beating out Kevin Ellis for starting time at Sporting could be competing for starting time at Porto? I'll throw that out to either one of you that wants to answer that one.
For me, I think while he's going to Porto, I think EPB is going to find – the majority of his time, at least this season, if not the first part of next season, which the loan runs through, I think he's going to find the majority of his time with Porto B, which plays in the second division and is actually fairly good. I think they're on top of the table there. The only thing I think keeping them from being in the top division in Portugal is the fact that they can't be in the same division as the main Porto team. So I think ETB is going to get his minutes with the B team in the second division at this point and see how it goes from there.
Yeah, I think it's probably a fair assessment. But if he's going to see what it takes to be, in terms of the kind of preparation and work and skill it's going to take to be at a top, at a top club in Portugal and one of the pretty strong European club. So I think you're probably if he sees minutes for the senior side, it'll be early on in domestic cup, that sort of play, if he gets those senior minutes. But even those are going to be valuable because, again, it's playing time in a different environment, in a pretty tough environment, where he doesn't have that safety net around him of his his friends and his hometown, that sort of thing. I actually think it's a really good move for him. Does it mean that Sporting could lose him sometime if he thrives there? It does, but I think it's a risky take. And if he thrives and wants to go to Europe and stay there, then again, you sell him, you make money, and you reinvest in the club, and it winds up looking good for MLS and for this region and for Sporting's academy and homegrown system as well.
And being the second homegrown player to make a move to Europe in a matter of a couple of days, essentially, with Miazga going, although Matt going maybe a little higher profile move there, it does at least bode a little well for MLS and the academy system at the moment. At least has a little positive light on it.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's... Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, going with Vermees with the last few days, too, he's definitely given the definition of buy low and sell high, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, and Mike has been the guy who really tracks the moves over the years more than I have in terms of guys coming in, guys going out. But Mike seems like that's kind of been his MO since he really got involved in 2006, hasn't it? I mean, that's how it seems like to me.
I mean, I think so to a point.
I mean, Vermees has taken some risks with some players, but, the ones that have paid off have been good payoffs. I mean, you mentioned Kai earlier and, selling him, selling Yuri. Those have been, good paydays for Sporting and have funded really at least a couple of DPs for us so far. But should fans question these moves as much as they have, maybe?
I think so, but I think you have to look at you rattled off a few names there like Yuri and Kamara, and I mean you could even throw in Colin and even Espinoza. And while Kansas City has done decent business with most of those moves, you have to look at what Kansas City has done immediately after that to rebolster their own roster, basically. And anybody they've brought in hasn't immediately filled the gap that the player that left was. I mean, it took until we got Namath to find a guy to really be able to play the wing the way Kamara did for us. With Colin, we're still really looking for that center back that can really step up and play next to Beisler. It took until this season to replace Yuri at the defensive midfield position. So we've done good business with the buy low, sell high mindset, but in that turnaround, we haven't done much to get to keep ourselves at the same level we were before we did that business.
the incoming hasn't matched the outgoing, really.
Well, I think the turnaround in D-Mid was a little bit shorter than that because mid-season 14 and Sony, granted, it took him a while to really kind of play into the position, but he got here before the start of the 15 season and plays the position differently. But I think he's been good. Maybe he's not the distributor that Uri was, obviously, but I think he's a pretty strong D-Mid with a half-season gap. Opara can stay healthy. Then I think you've got that replacement at center back. And then, of course, you've got Nuno coming in as well, coming off
the
injury,
issue with
obviously.
Ike is the issue with Ike is he's had one healthy season in six. So, we can keep saying that, as long as Ike stays healthy, well, he's had five seasons where he hasn't shown he can stay healthy. So, I mean, I love the guy. He's a great when he's on the field. He's just not on the field enough.
Yeah, I won't argue that, Mike. Sorry, Steve, but I wouldn't argue about Ike not being on the field enough. The one caveat I would say to that about is we're saying that now with another year of injury under the belt from last year. Going into last year, it was kind of the expectation that he was recovered from the previous year and he was as healthy as he had been and all this other stuff. He still has had several, obviously, years where he was seasons where he didn't play very much because of injuries, but he'd had one good year. He'd had an injured year, and we kind of looked like, that was a little bit of a gamble, but he was the guy who could replace Colin. Now, with that year of hindsight that we have, obviously we don't think that he can replace Colin because he's too big of a risk. Before he was a risk, now he's too big of a risk. If he stays healthy, it's a great play, and we have three center backs, hopefully, if Nuno is remotely as good as what they think he could be. We have three very good center backs. Otherwise, we have two, and we still have Ellis and Olam and whoever else, guys being called up from the Rangers to fill that spot. I wish Ike all the best, but that's what I agree with your argument, but I'm just saying you're looking at it now from one more year of hindsight availability, where a year ago he did look like he could be the guy who could fill him in.
Yeah, he's had a hard luck run in the last couple of years. I mean, he gets kicked in the ankle, and he gets called for a penalty on the same play. Nobody can see that happen. That's not a fragility injury. That's just bad play on the opponent's part. To come back from a broken tail, this is pretty impressive. Last year, I mean, you land wrong, you blow your Achilles. That's the one that's more concerning to me than the talus the previous year. The talus the previous year was inflicted on him. The blown Achilles is the one that still has to be the concern. And I think they're addressing that with bringing in Nuno. Again, though, is he going to be able to come back from a year off? But by and large, it's hard to argue with three trophies in 4 years for a small market team. Would they have liked to do better last year? But for a double bonk off the post, who knows how far they could have gone. But three trophies in 4 years is not shabby for a club in sporting situation at all.
Okay, I kind of took Steve to kind of throwing that out to you, but I would agree, Steve. It's not bad at all for three trophies in 4 years, and an Open Cup, an MLS Cup, a really really down year with injuries and World Cup exhaustion, and then last year an Open Cup and a couple of unlucky bounce off a post, and you never know, A week ago, we were talking about how deep Sporting was, and they're going to have to get rid of some talent, or some of the lower level talent to get roster compliant. Now a week later, we've lost our most talented scorer, or at least from last year, the most technical at least, a young prospect for the year. We haven't lost him, but at least for the year. So now we're pretty close to being roster compliant, and are we as deep? Is Sporting as deep as what we thought they were a week ago?
not a forward, obviously. I mean, that's a given. They are not as they don't have that guy who's going to break ankles now. I mean, Mapp's got some deceptive moves, but he doesn't. He's not a guy who can spin you around and make that kind of run that like Namath did through Portland. Davis the same way. I mean, he's in his 30s. He's not going to be the guy who gets people all tangled up in themselves. Again, a wily veteran, but they don't have that guy now who can take the ball and just make people look stupid. And I think if it shows up early on that's going to be a serious handicap. They've got until May to address that. Remember, the transfer window doesn't end until May, and then it opens up again in the summer. So they've got some time, even after the start of the season, to try to address that. Find again that guy, a good player in a bad situation. I don't think people need to panic, but I think that creative forward spot, just ankle breaking forward spot, you would hope as a fan that would get filled sooner rather than later.
Thoughts, Mike?
I mean, I think you have to look to address the forward spot now. I mean, if you wait until late in our transfer window, if you keep delaying what pretty much seems inevitable about needing to find a replacement for someone, I think you're putting yourself in a very tight place there. And based off the what came out of the conference call, at least what I saw on Twitter, I don't really think Sporting has that sort of urgency right now in that regard. And I mean, we're one Dwyer injury away from starting Jacob Peterson, Graham Zuzi, or 19-year-old Saloy at forward for an extended period of time, and that just doesn't fill you with a whole lot of confidence in that regard. I mean, if one of those three is the next guy behind Namath, then I think you feel a little bit better about it. But going into the season with those three predominantly being your backup center forward is really disconcerting and a little scary when it comes to Sporting.
If there is one good thing about this, is Dwyer has been just, I don't want to say freakishly durable, but really, really durable at that center forward spot. He hasn't been a guy who's taken, you know, a lot of nagging knocks that keep him out for any length of time. Just again, tremendous physical condition has a lot to do with that. I think is the way he plays has a lot to do with that as well. But again, yeah, if somebody chops him down and busts him up, then yeah, that center forward spot is suddenly a concern. They have money right now. Now, what they do with it, how what they're doing right now behind the scenes, I imagine if they've known that this was in the last couple of weeks that this was in the works, they've probably been burning up the phone lines, trying to get somebody lined up. I don't think they've been sitting on their hands waiting for Namath to decide what he wants to do. I think as soon as the agent started to say, "Hey, look, your offer is not what we have in mind," I think the second they heard that, even while they were still trying to hammer things out, I think they were probably making some inquiries as quickly as they could. This is not a front office that gets a lot of sleep.
Yeah, I would think that they were looking. And to be honest, if you talk to Peter kind of to the side a little bit sometimes, he will give you an idea of how many different players they're actually talking to out there and keeping an eye on, and, you know, which ones are in what situation that they might be, if they needed to swoop in and try to get somebody. They have a deep list of players that they're always watching. They can't always get them right away, or they can't always spend the money on them right away, or they're unwilling to spend the money on him right away. I'd say that's the one downside of the Trader Pete persona is he's not going to overpay for somebody, even if we perceive that they really have a desperate need at that position. He is not going to overpay and bring somebody in that, you know, throws off the balance of what he thinks people are worth for that, for this league.
Well, yeah, and that's with the way he looks at building this club anyway. He's not, we were talking about this earlier. I was talking about this earlier with Andrew Wiebe. He's not the kind of a guy who's going to splash a lot on one guy and starve everybody else to make that happen. I think it seems like he's tried to do is spread it out pretty well among all the core players, A, to keep people happy, and B, to keep them skewing the salary table for future negotiations. Because all of a sudden, if you overpay a guy, then your core guy comes back later and says, hey, look how much you paid for this guy that you brought in. I want the same kind of a deal. And then you got to start matching, and then you run into cap problems. So I think they have to, in terms of what they're wanting to do, with the way they get this system set up and they've been building the roster, they've got to hold the line on costs as much as possible. They can't go overpaying for a guy that they're not going to be sure they can get the value out of on the pitch. They're going to pack the stands no matter what. As long as the club has a reasonable level of success, I think they're going to pack the stands. So it's not like you got to bring in a guy who's a marquee name to get butts in the seats. What they want is a pretty high overall level of play where they've got a whole bunch of guys on the club making pretty much in the same range, some guys making more than others, but nothing well over market value.
Yep. Yeah, and other than possibly a couple of DPs, Vermees really hasn't overpaid for anybody that you've seen. Have you seen anybody that he's really overpaid for other than some DPs, Mike?
I mean, I'm sure if you gave me enough time, I could probably come up with somebody who they've overpaid, at least in recent history. But I mean, other than a DP like a Jefferson.
Jefferson Trump. I couldn't get in there early enough. Okay, go ahead.
and then I guess if you want to throw out a name that we may have overpaid a little bit for, someone like Bobby Convey, or if you want to look at just pure stats, even Devalle back in 2014 was probably overpaid for what we did. But in both of those situations, I don't think they were greatly overpaid to the point where it was a detriment to the team.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I'm not saying that I won't say that nobody was ever paid. I will not say that nobody was ever paid more than what their total value was, but as a comparison to their experience, history, and what they were expected to deliver, I don't think anybody was really grossly overpaid, unless that contract came from somebody else and, you know, maybe part of it's being picked up by Orlando still. Subtle hint. And a couple of the DPs obviously didn't turn out the way they possibly hoped. Jefferson still, he's got such a bad rap. He actually was a pretty talented player, just got injured and never showed up again. And then they wanted to keep him, but they weren't willing to pay whoever his home club was. Because he was here on loan.
You know, they got good value out of Omar Bravo until he got hurt. And then, of course, they got this was a clash of personalities. Is Bravo thinking he should have played late in the season, Vermees thinking, you know, he wasn't at full peak and shouldn't have been playing. They got good value out of him in 2011 as a DP. You think about a real bust, and I don't know what they were paying Carlos Marinelli back in the day. Whatever he was getting was probably overpaid, whatever it was. But in terms of guys they've gotten in the midseason acquisitions, the summer transfer guys that they brought in, Uri being one, and because they've gotten in the window, none of those have been like huge gigantic, you know, mid-season acquisitions that you know they're splashing a lot of cash on. I mean, you get a guy like, or you get a guy like a Nevan Markovic, or like guys like that, who aren't maybe making a huge amount of noise in terms of oh, this guy's huge. But it seems like they've gotten pretty good value overall for the guys that they brought in, whatever they're paying them. And if they haven't, you know, again, like Connery, those people won't stay around long.
All right. Have we beat to death enough the roster moves over the last couple of days?
Oh, I think as much as we're beating them to death, I think they're still going to be going on. The Facebook and the Twitter discussions are going to be going on for the next couple, 3 days. So whatever we say tonight, I don't think it's going to exhaust the amount of discussion on the subject.
No, I would agree with that. There's still going to be a lot of angst out there, and understandably so. Change the subject up a little bit, though. We did at least have a game, not that we could see it, but there was at least a game for Sporting fans to have heard results from. And I know it was just a game against FC Tucson, and they probably could have scored 17 more goals if Namath had been playing in it. But otherwise, did we get any impressions from the first couple of halves that they played against the PDL team? Mike, I mean, did you get, like, you know, any sense of the roster or who's doing well? Or
I mean, I don't think you got much sense of...
I don't think you can take much, especially from the first preseason game, especially when it's only 60 minutes and nobody played more than 30. I don't think there's a lot you can take from it. I mean, I think the first 11 that were out there were pretty much your best 11 minus a couple players like Failhaber and Mustafar and Beisler. Other than that, I think that's pretty much what the lineup that you're going to see in Seattle for opening day, barring another addition. But I mean, yeah, there's really not a lot you can take from it. More or less, the team was what you'd expect, and it's what you expect because they had, at the time, they still had 30 players for a 28-man roster. I mean, there's not a lot of mystery as to what's going on with this team. We discussed it last week. There's not going to be a trialist 1, a trialist 2 through 12 this season in camp. So it's just kind of some of those little individual battles, the outside back positions, for who's going to win those and basically who's going to take Namath's spot. Other than that, there's not a lot of mystery, I think, for the team this preseason.
How about you, Steve? Did you get anything from it?
Well, again, I'm flashing back last year when Namath just lit up FC Tucson and we were talking, does this mean anything? And I think you were on the no, this doesn't mean anything yet. And I was on the, hey, four goals is still four goals in terms of being able to finish. But from that standpoint, I think it's good to see Dwyer and Davis developing that chemistry already, each one scoring off the other one's assist. It's a PDL team, but to see that kind of chemistry developing already between those two guys, I think that's a decent sign, and I think that's encouraging as to how Davis is going to fit into this roster.
Okay, fair enough. Here's the one thing that I took from that was last week we talked about how deep the team was, and you know, basically wanting to have two teams out there, or being capable to put almost two full teams out there with, you know, multiple competitions, the Open Cup and Champions League and such forth. And when you looked at the rosters that they put out there, it was, dang, you could have taken either one of those and started last season and been fairly happy with it, with the exception of Peterson at center forward after Namath was not there. Other than that, you could have been fairly happy with either one of those lineups.
Well, I think, you know, Connor Hallison getting two. I think he is really feeling the pressure to stay up with the senior squad. And again, it's a PDL side, but to have him step up and score twice, he shows how seriously he's taken this camp and trying to hang on to that roster spot on the wing. So I liked seeing that line as well.
Absolutely. All right. Well, since we've probably talked about everything we've planned to, is there anything else out there that we should probably discuss while we have the three of us on the call? Steve, you got anything?
No, I think the whole stuff with Nimmitt and EPB has really kind of dominated the discussion the last couple of days. The only thing that I'll say is I'm still really looking forward to seeing how the fullback battle shapes out with so many candidates, to see how many of them are still around on opening day. That, to me, that's where a lot of the attention is maybe going to be focused on this preseason. Who's going to really step up and grab those fullback spots and go into the season as the first choice? It's going to be fun to watch and see how that plays out.
Cool. Any last words there, Mike?
Yeah, I agree with what Steve was saying about the fullbacks. I mean, I mentioned it briefly, but I think we'd all kind of thought that fullback was a position before this week, and maybe even still, fullback was a position where Kansas City could afford to maybe make a move to free up a roster spot in that regard, simply because of the depth that we had in that position. So it's a really interesting situation in regards to who starts, who stays, who potentially goes in that situation. There's a lot of moving parts and too many players to fill them at this point in the fullback positions. But again, as we talked to death, there's been so much. There's the movement that's occurred to create the space that actually allows us to be technically roster compliant, at least for a few days in that regard. But I mean, other than that, it's like Steve said, everything's dominated right now by Namath and Palmer Brown.
The other thing, we're talking about the fullbacks and the forward position, though, is now you have another wing spot, and is that a way for Marcel DeJong to, because he's played on the wing for Sporting last year with you know, Peter is high on his ability to get forward when he's healthy and his ability to go from distance. Is now Namath leaving an opening for DeJong to make a case on the wing? And to kind of throw a little monkey wrench in the works there in terms of making it difficult to get rid of him, or not to get rid of him, but to move him someplace else if he has that versatility to play any of those left side spots.
I
yeah,
think
very
it
possibly.
Does a little bit, sorry, Thad. I think it does a little bit, but I mean that also you also have two guys that you really brought in this offseason. Now, in hindsight, probably to fight for that starting job to take over for Namath in Davis and Mapp. So the question is there then too much at that left wing position on the roster with that regard? So I mean it's a good problem to have with all this depth, but eventually you're going to run into egos. You're going to run into needs in other positions, and you're going to have to look to move somebody. And I'm not saying DeJong's the one that needs to go, but his versatility is a major plus, and he's playing a position. His two main primary positions are positions where we're quite deep at the moment.
Yeah, it's. I think it's going to be an intensely competitive camp at several spots, and I, that that will I think the harder guys have to fight for that roster spot in the spring, the better the odds of Sporting really hitting the ground running when March rolls around and they're playing in earnest.
Yeah, all that competition just bodes well for Sporting, to be honest. I just wish, and who knows, maybe the 19-year-old Hungarian comes in and pushes Dom also. I'm kind of hopeful with that at this point. I guess we could wrap it up. Anything else, guys?
No, I think I've rambled on enough with my over-caffeinated self.
Mike,
same here. No, I've talked plenty.
Yeah, it's the great thing is we could probably talk for 2 hours and we just end up saying a lot of the same things. I'm hopeful that there will be some positive news because in light of everything with Namath and EPB is that center mid that Rob has said that they put in a loan offer for but turned into an acquisition that we've not heard a thing about since then. So that may be another push on the roster size, but hey, what position does that guy fill if it actually happens? So everybody's kind of forgotten about that guy.
We'll have to see what happens.
Right.
It's a very real possibility to set up that way.
Sorry, Steve, we lost you there. Couldn't hear a thing.
I said, when you keep bringing in mids, you wind up with a 4-5-1 to start the year. I mean, you could make a case for something like that with the way you use the guys on the wings, maybe as extra mids. If they bring in another attacking mid, it's gonna be even more crowded. But I think that's a topic for when and if that actually happens.
Yeah, and when we have some clue of what that person is. So,
yeah.
All right, well, look, guys, I appreciate you both being able to join again, and I'm sure we will have a reason to get back together again in the next few days. Coming up in the next few days, there's no scrimmage against Tucson on Wednesday like had been originally on the schedule. They canceled it, but they are still playing the South Korean team this weekend, and then they head back to Kansas City for a little bit, and then the rest of the Rangers, because there's a couple of them already in camp, will join them down there for the whole tournament. I forget what they call it.
Yeah.
Desert Diamond Cup, is that it?
Desert Diamond Cup, yep. So, yep, more to come.
All right. Appreciate it, guys, and thanks. Thanks again to Mike Kuhn from downthebyline.com and Steve Brizendine from MLS Soccer. Good night, guys.
Night.
Good night.
I can bring the TV, you can bring the beer. We'll wave our flags from the front porch. There's a party on in here. Well, it's a football night.
Whoa.
Well, it's a football night.
Whoa.
We can gather all the friends all around the zoo. There's not a better thing to do. Well, it's a football night.
Whoa.
Well, it's a football night.
Whoa.
When the final whistle blows, you know we're gonna feel alright. The fate of hearts, so all you gents beware. Well, it's a football night.
Whoa.
Well, it's a football night.
Whoa.
We can gather all the friends all around the zoom. That's not a better thing to do. Well, it's a football night.
Whoa.
Well, it's a football night.
Whoa.
When the final whistle blows, we're gonna celebrate tonight. When the final whistle blows, we're gonna celebrate tonight. When the final whistle blows, you know we're gonna feel alright.